Welcome to Dialogues with Creators. We are in our 8th season, and I'm looking forward to 11 or 12 episodes this spring with guests talking about their creativity. One of those areas is teaching, and specifically how college faculty guide students through reading important texts and literature and such. Our first discussion with a faculty member about a book dealt with a book from 2,400 years ago, Plato's Republic. Today's discussion will focus on a book much more recent, from 2007, and the guest is someone I worked with for several years, Dr. Forrest Blackburn, Associate Professor of Spanish at Dalton State College. The book we are going to discuss is The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, that's a mouthful, about the Dominican Republic diaspora and the years the people of the Dominican Republic lived under the vicious Rafael Trujillo's dictatorship. Hang on to your seats as we talk about this multi-layered story. Welcome, Dr. Blackburn.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for inviting me. It's good to be here.
Okay. I'm so happy you could be. And I want to start with you telling us your story. How did you come to Dalton State, and how did you get interested in Spanish literature? The long version or the short version, whichever you prefer.
So I'll start with how I came to Dalton State. I did my bachelor's and master's at Mississippi State University in Spanish and French, my PhD in Romance Languages at the University of Alabama. And upon graduation from the University of Alabama, I was looking for jobs. I didn't know anything about Dalton. I applied for a job at Dalton State at the same time that I applied for a job in Anchorage, Alaska, and a job in Dallas, and a job in Michigan. So I just was applying all over the place. And, you know, when you're applying for jobs, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit disheartening as you look at what others are looking for. And sometimes people talk about, you know, I saw a job ad and that job ad had my name on it. And that's really how I felt about the job when I read the ad at Dalton State. I felt like it really the things that I brought were really what Dalton State was looking for. And so I'm, you know, very, very grateful that it worked out. So that's sort of the long story about how I came to Dalton State. Why Spanish and French and Hispanic Francophone literatures and all of that stuff. So when I was in middle school, so I went to elementary school, which was, you know, K through five, and then middle school was 6 through 8. So on my first day of middle school, I was in some sort of a quote unquote special rotation. And it was, I had 6 weeks of Spanish, 6 weeks of French, and 6 weeks of home ec. If you can imagine that was the rotation. And then in seventh grade, we had 6 weeks of art, 6 weeks of shop, you know, so that's just what the rotation was. But that first day of school, I had that Spanish class towards the end of the day. And I knew that my parents were going to pick me up that afternoon because at that time I was not riding the bus, and I knew that they were going to be late. So I guess I don't know what was going on. They had told me that they were going to be late or whatever the case may be or whatever the case was. So I wasn't worried, but I had this time after a lot of people had left, their parents had already come to pick them up, that I just kind of said to myself, me llamo Forrest. ¿Cómo te llamas? ¿De dónde eres? Hola. And so the phrases that I just learned, I just thought it was cool. Yeah. I just thought, like a chemist finds a reaction to be amazing, I just thought it was really cool that I knew how to say that in those different languages. And then, you know, I'm very fortunate to follow in the footsteps of a very inspiring Spanish teacher in high school. And so that's really how I got into the Spanish and French. And and literature and linguistics. I did more linguistic type work in my master's degree, but I specialized in literature at the doctoral level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fascinating. Yeah. I started learning Spanish about that time too. And I wish they would, you know, had started earlier, but we had to take French in fourth, fifth and sixth grade back in the day. Yeah. I took a lot of French and, I don't know why. I guess at the time, because this was the early 60s, mid 60s, I guess they figured that one made more sense. But now Spanish makes more sense for people. And I remember those days very much. That's great, though, because I'm a firm believer that in learning a second language and learning it early as possible and in immersion and everything like that. So at Dalton State, you, along with teaching Spanish literature and language, you've had some other roles, including one that was near and dear to me for a few years. You want to say anything about that?
Sure. Well, I would ask first which one that was near and dear to you.
The QEP.
Okay. Because, I was coordinator for the honors program at FIRST, and that was, you know, you've kind of set me up in a variety of different ways, because you had that experience with the previous iteration of honors.
Yeah.
But then the QEP, I was the director of that, which QEP stands for Quality Enhancement Plan. And for those listening, Barbara was the planning committee chair for that. So she was charged with making a plan, and I was charged with implementing it.
Yeah, we're doing something with it.
Yeah, so it was called PACE. It still is. PACE, Perspectives, Advising, Campus Resources, and Engagement. And so it really was a well-drawn-up plan to provide meaningful interventions for our students to ensure their success, especially in the first year. And so recently I have handed over the reins to my former associate director, Dr. Brooklyn Herrera, who is now serving as the director. So I'm sure that they're doing well. So
you're doing some other administrative types of things now too. So
yes, I am working as special assistant for leadership development at Dalton State, and I'm actually on a dual appointment as well as special assistant for organizational leadership at mm-hmm. Georgia Highlands College. And mm-hmm. so they vary a little bit. At Georgia Highlands, I'm working with various groups on campus, emerging leaders, mid-level leaders, and also executives plus deans and assistant vice presidents on ways that that we can grow as team members and also as individuals, because I think we're leadership is about a team, but it's also about how you show up on your own and how you show up in your personal life. So that role is more programming. We're doing a couple of book groups, and I'm also facilitating meaningful conversations at the executive cabinet level at Georgia Highlands. At Dalton State, we are not as far along because Georgia Highlands kind of hired me and said, all right, Forrest, this is what we want. Go and do it. Dalton State was a little bit more planning, was a little bit more, I would say, intentional and cautious. So I did draw up a leadership development framework for Dalton State, and we're calling that Bloom. Partially because everybody loves an acronym, Bloom stands for beginning, opening, ownership, and mastery. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I missed one.
You missed the L. Yeah.
I missed the L. Beginning, learning, opening, ownership, and mastery. So yeah. I thought something didn't quite sound right there. So
Okay. Anyway,
so I'm looking at employees at Dalton State and providing them, looking for opportunities to provide them to grow. We've got some existing leadership development opportunities that we like to connect people with, like Leadership Dalton Whitfield, Leadership Catoosa, Leadership Murray, areas in our service area. Also, there are programs affiliated with the University System of Georgia, like the Executive Leadership Institute, Great from the Middle. And we're looking to also do some in-house related programming as well. So that's the long version of what I'm working on.
Right. Well, I know you love it. And I know you've enjoyed getting into this other area that is sort of related to your graduate school work and sort of not. But and of course, it's a topic we can go off on for about an hour because I'm very much interested in leadership and higher ed and and where higher ed is going and things like that.
Sure.
So, but to segue to the more about the novel and your teaching, do you teach the novel we are discussing today?
I have, and I do. When I teach, I couldn't tell you the number, but the upper division English, it's Latino Lit in Translation, I think is the name. When I've taught that class, I've taught this novel and also the Humanities 3001, The Migration and U.S. Latino Experience. I have taught this novel in that class as well. So.
Okay. That one would go well for this one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Definitely. Okay. Well, okay. As we get into this, all that lays the foundation for a big question I've wanted to ask you since the first time you recommended this novel to me about 5 years ago or more. And I read it at that time. And so my question is, why do you love this novel so much?
You know, that makes me think about the movie Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Where there's Will Hunting, who is this genius. Uh-huh. And somebody is asking him, it's probably his therapist that's played by Robin Williams.
Yeah.
His therapist that's asking him, do you like to read? You know, what do you like? What kind of books do you like? And his response is whatever blows your hair back.
Oh.
And that's why I love this novel is because it blows your hair back.
Yeah.
It is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
You read certain lines and you're like, wait, did he just say that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you read it again and you're like, yeah, he did just say that. It is experimental. It's shocking. It challenges the contingencies of so many genres. It's a beautiful love story, filled with emotions that all of us have, and it brings all of us closer to this character of Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's through the vehicle of the narrator. So you have kind of this dual thing going on where Oscar is the protagonist of the Bildungsroman, yeah. But he is and he isn't, in the sense that the one who's really being transformed and who's really growing is Junior, his friend, who has his own issues. And it's just I could keep going, but it's just a fascinating I guess tome is the appropriate word. Mm-hmm. And it's you already mentioned the layers. It's just a fascinating novel.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I would agree with you. I think, like you said, it's a pretty shocking at first. So you have to kind of the second reading was much better because I knew what I was going to be reading. And excuse me. Some of the, I don't know, especially Junior, the way he talks about women, yeah, really got to me. He was such a player, I guess is the word, I don't know. He's like, he so objectifies all the women and, you know, so insincere in that regard. But so can you give a short synopsis of, if it's possible, of the book, just so people have an idea?
Well, and I would also, if I can back up a little bit, so there's the notion of the tigre dominicano, which is this hyper masculine Dominican male, this notion of hyper masculinity. So Junior, as offensive as it might be to you and me, it rings true, so to speak. So there's some realism there. Mm-hmm. So back to a synopsis of the book. You know, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde is a tragic story that is beautiful about how people come to terms with themselves amid a pretty crippling dictatorial regime.
Mm-hmm.
And how people come to terms with national and cultural identity, both on the island and in the United States, amid sort of the hegemonic structures of Trujillo, the Trujillo regime. Or in the United States, the hegemonic structure that others, people who are not white. And so over the course of the novel, over the course of Junior's narration, we come to discover the intricacies of these characters, including Trujillo. Mm-hmm. We learn about Lola. We learn about her mother, Belly. We learn about Oscar. We learn about Belly's parents, who she never knew. Right. We learn about La Inca. And we really learn all of the historical pieces that cause Oscar to be Oscar and Junior to be Junior. So that's just a brief synopsis, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, that's good, because it doesn't really give, you know, plot points away, but it's about the general thematic progression of it. And it's interesting to me, because I was reading it, and this time I caught why they called him Oscar Wilde, or Weo, when his name is Oscar de Leon in the book, I mean, his real name. And it's because his cohorts, or the kids in his college or whatever, they associate him with Oscar Wilde, of all things, you know. And I said, oh, that's where it comes from. So they just kind of took that as Oscar Wilde, you know, Wow or Why, in the same way. And I think that says a lot in the context of the whole novel, of how he's perceived, like you said, because he's not that hyper-masculinized thing. But I especially love this time of reading it, the sci-fi and the fantasy and the Tolkien connections to the book. It was funny. Some of it was very funny, but it was so, it was touching too, you know, how he brought, is it Juno Diaz brought that into the book, into Oscar's life, because he is a nerdy, you know, reads that kind of stuff. The title says Brief Wondrous Life. I understand the brief. Why do you think it's wondrous?
Oh, that's a great question. Why is it wondrous? But how do I say that it's wondrous without giving it away?
Ah, okay. So I won't make you do that, though.
No, that's okay. I think that I'll just say that it's wondrous because Oscar wanders, yet Oscar finds what he's looking for.
Oh.
That's why I would say that it's, that's why I would say that it's wondrous.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I kind of came up with a different answer, but you know the book better than I, so I'll go.
Maybe not. Go ahead.
It may be a statement that even in all the horrible stuff his family went through, especially his mom, that life is, you know, even in that you can find the wondrous,
mm-hmm.
you know. That may be too cliched, though. So, like I said, True Confessions, the first time I read it, I was sort of like, huh? I really enjoyed the history part, because that was part of my own life. I remember it. And I could tell from a craft and narrative perspective, it was perspective was brilliant, but the story on the surface is not exactly an uplifting one. Let me say, on the surface, okay? Yeah. In fact, after I read it, it was the first time it was a major downer for me for a couple of reasons. It just obviously the basic plot line and the loss of life, the cruelty, the horrible stuff that went on in the Trujillo regime and going on. And it was like, you know, the rest of the world was like, eh, whatever, you know. So let's start with an underlying theme, and that's the curse. I think it's called the Fuku. Is that correct? And it's not just a plot point, but it's a statement about the history of that part of the Americas. Am I reading that right? Is it just a Dominican thing or there's something more?
You know, the Fuku, Juno Diaz actually speaks a little bit about that. And I think it's in the introduction, but he says that the Haitians talk about Fufus. And he says that the Puerto Rocks have something just like it. So he's talking about Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
So it's not just a Dominican thing. Okay. It's the curse of the New World. And that makes me think of Rosa Bosso, who was one of my Spanish professors in college during my undergrad. And then she, you know, Dominicana, and she, I remember after reading this book, she told me, she said, Farah, she said, this idea of like a fuku, she said, it exists. Hmm. So she was very much a believer in this notion of the fuku americanos. And so that's the curse of the New World. You know, why is the New World cursed? Maybe it's because of colonialism in the Caribbean, not just in the Caribbean, but also in other areas of America. Why is, you know, maybe it's United States involvement in, you know, embargoes in areas of the Caribbean. There's this this notion of the fuku being the state that you somehow inherit, and the only counterspell for the curse, counterspell being the word that Juno Diaz uses, is the notion of safa. And that is a derivative of the Spanish word safarse, which means to flee. So there's the curse that you inherit, but then the notion of fleeing that which you inherit. You know, whether it's the sins of the father or whatever the case may be. So that's kind of the relationship with the fuku and the safa. I would also be remiss if I didn't mention, in the case of safa, this notion of a fugue and the notion that Juno Diaz employs sort of a new, like a neo-Baroque sort of postmodernism to his narrative, in the sense that, like in a Baroque fugue, you have certain themes and repetition and ornamentation, all of which I see in Juno Diaz's text. So this notion of a fugue, of fleeing away. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like fugit, the word fugit, to flee. Yeah. As opposed to fugue, as in people say fugue state, you know, mentally. Okay. So yeah, that's very interesting, because, so do you see the safarse, the safa is like, is that the impetus for the diaspora?
Yes.
I'm missing the point.
Yes, I would think so. But yeah, the diaspora is not necessarily, and that's part of the fugue. The diaspora is not just Dominican Republic, La República Dominicana, to the United States. One of the things that you see in in this text particularly is the notion of a return to the home country. So that you have to remember, you know, Oscar, born in the United States, you know, what he is trying to escape is not the same thing that Belly was trying to escape when she left the Dominican Republic. You know, she's trying to escape actual danger as a result of La Dictadura Trujillata, whereas Oscar is trying to discover his roots that position him in sort of a subaltern way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Do you think the Foucault is a curse of the Caribbean then? And related to that, there's a great deal in the book, great deal of use of the racial slur, you know, the N word, as we say.
Yeah.
And is that related to the fact or the cultural whatever that it's people are mixed race and some come out more dark and African looking than others? I don't know a nicer way to put that. Is that related somehow to class structures within the culture?
Yeah. Okay. For sure. Okay. So the United States particularly, and I'm oversimplifying race here a little bit.
Yeah, yes, I understand.
The United States functions racially in a sort of a dualist sort of racial paradigm, and that is white or black.
Right.
Now in the Dominican Republic, there are not black Dominicans.
Okay.
To be black is to be Haitian.
Ah, okay.
So that's why there's all of this, all of this stuff about hair and all of this stuff about how Trujillo bleached his own, talked about him being a mulatto who bleached his own skin.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff. That one thing is in The Brief Wonders Life of Oscar Wilde is sort of re-encountering and reappropriating blackness that was erased over the course of almost a century. And when I say erased, I mean there was just the notion of, you know, all Dominicans, every racial version of a Dominican is a version of white or an iteration of white. And then this notion of, so that's just suppressing that blackness in that regard. But then you have another kind of erasure, which is the Parsley Massacre of Haitians, which Junal Diaz talks about in 1937. And that's called the Parsley Massacre because the secret police asked Haitians or asked people in the area of the border to say the word perejil, and those who said it with a French je for the J, they killed them. So that's sort of like a semiotic language as God sort of tape. But that's another sort of erasure of the blackness of the island of Hispaniola. And to re-encounter and reappropriate. And when I say reappropriate, I don't mean in a negative way, like cultural appropriation has a negative terminology. Reappropriate, re-attribute, re-retrieve, so to speak, the nation the notion of blackness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I thought that was a very interesting aside to it. It was, you know, one of those things you had to kind of like, okay, you know, get used to it first. But there was a lot of discussion for that points about that in the book. And sometimes it seemed to be that a person was being put down, if you will, because they were darker and had curlier hair, if you will, whatever. And versus, you know, there's real tension between who they were and how they were supposed to look and be and things like that. So like I said, the second time I read it, I was much more appreciative of the book, and some of that may have been because I had recently read In the Time of Butterflies by Julia Alvarez, which is a very different book, but about the same time period and setting. Do you ever have students read that book?
You know, I haven't, and I need to reread it because it's been a long time as well. You know, I think, you know, you mentioning that, I think it would be a very good choice. Mm-hmm. When I'm doing a U.S. Latino lit course, I would only do In the Time of the Butterflies at the expense of The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not certain.
I wouldn't want you to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't. So it, because I'm not teaching a Dominican lit or a Caribbean lit class. You know, we've got some Chicano works that we have to talk about, or I say that we get to talk about and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. That book, I think I got a better sense of the history. Well, in the basic narrative, Diaz has these wonderful footnotes that go on and on, which is funny in a way, but they're very helpful. And they're witty, that to explain the background and the history, whereas Alvarez's book is more about the history and what it was like. What it was like for a woman of a certain class to live under that and still be so subjected to the objectification by Trujillo. If he or one of his whatevers wanted a woman, it didn't matter who she was, you know, they were going to get her. They were just victimized in that respect. So it was just so hard to read. In your research on the novel and the author, how much of this is autobiographical or drawn from his life? For example, the Cabral family story and the horrible things that happened to his mother at that time, to Oscar's mother, Beli.
Yeah, that's a great question. Where does Juno Diaz stop and Junior begins and vice versa? I think that all texts are autobiographical in their own right. All fictional novels, you know, have their flavor of autobiography. In regard to how much of this is autobiographical, my only answer to you would be some. That's really as far as I could get on that. Because if you try to, if you try to dig too deep on that question, it'll drive you crazy, drive you into, we already talked about a fugue, drive you into madness as you try to think of who is Junior and who is Juno Diaz and how does Junior manifest himself as part of Juno Diaz's imagination. I could talk to you about The Death of the Author by Roland Barthes, the notion that we should, completely take Juno Diaz out of consideration because he no longer exists, at the point that he creates a narrator. There's some, narratology theory and that sort of stuff, which I got a little bit into in some of my research, but not tons. So mm-hmm. Sorry if that's a cop out for your question.
No, I just wondered, if you'd read like narrative biographical material about him. That was he born in New Jersey, for example? Did he grow up in New Jersey?
Yeah, I believe. Okay.
So that's because he seems to know that area very well. He seems to be a local when it comes to New Jersey,
Sure.
And that kind of thing. Actually, in that idea of his connection between Junior, he seems to be, even though he's using Junior and maybe as a stand-in, no, I shouldn't say stand-in, but because he's a real character, but for the hyper-masculine male, he's a little bit, he's very sardonic, I guess, about it, or I get the satirical thing as well, you know, that Junior is so full of himself with the women and how, you know, he's such a no woman can resist him kind of thing, you know. And so I get this. To me, that's satirical. I don't know. Which brings me to the whole subject of the footnotes, because they're so involved. And how do you see those as functioning in the novel?
Well, and let me back up real quick. This is cheating, but I looked it up. Juno Diaz was actually born in Santo Domingo.
Okay.
So he was born in Santo Domingo and then immigrated to the United States, more specifically New Jersey.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't have spoken to that because I wasn't 100% sure when I said it of its accuracy. Yeah. But so the footnotes. So we'd already talked about the role of Trujillo, and a lot of the footnotes are about Trujillo. So, you know, when you think about the textual genre that uses footnotes, you know, a lot of times you think of history. So Juno Diaz, Junior actually says in the narration, says, for those of you who missed your mandatory 2 seconds of Dominican history.
Yes.
And so I will tell you one thing that's very interesting about this text is that that was my first introduction to Dominican history. You know, I was unfamiliar at the time that I read this book. I had not heard the name Rafael Trujillo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that ultimately what Juno Diaz is doing is certainly, I mean, he's playing with fiction and history in using footnotes about to account for, you know, for a historical figure in a work of quote unquote fiction or historical mm-hmm. fiction. He's also kind of subverting that in the sense of the language that he uses in those footnotes to refer to said dictator.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that he does also is he destabilizes the power of the Trujillato in the sense that one thing that Trujillo did was he put his name when he was in power everywhere. Okay, Santo Domingo was not Santo Domingo. It was Ciudad Trujillo.
Yeah.
So, you know, Trujillo City. And so something where Trujillo's name was everywhere, but in this text, it's relegated to a footnote,
mm-hmm.
something that some people don't even read. I mean, do we always read footnote? I would hate for somebody not to read the footnotes in this text.
You're right. Yeah. You missed a lot of the book.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But do we read footnote? And which so is, do people.
Which is a meta statement in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, that he's using footnotes for vital information, but if people miss it, that's clever. Yeah. I found them so funny and satirical. They're necessary. They're heartbreaking. They blew me away. How, you know, you said about the blows your hair back. I the footnotes were great. You know,
and the notion of, you know, you just mentioned that emotion, you know, that's another sort of critique of history and historical discourses in the sense that this the emotion attributed to the reader of these footnotes is much more charged than your typical historical narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next thing I was going to get into is I had a little observations, but I'm not sure I want to go there. But, you know, on the surface, the thread is, of course, there's Oscar, who's a nerdy, overweight, insecure kid. He just can't get a girl to love him for himself. He's in love with the idea of love. He's in love with every girl he sees. He idolizes them. Versus, you know, you've got the other extreme of Junior, this narrator, who is his off and on college roommate, it seems to be, he's not, I would call him an unreliable narrator to some extent. We should call him that. Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
Or maybe not unreliable. I'd say questionable.
Yeah.
A questionable narrator.
Yeah. So, and I kept thinking, you know, you guys are in college. Do you ever go to class or study or? But that's not interesting. He just wants to talk about the girls he goes out with. So, do you think in any way that Diaz is, I don't know, that he is being critical, self-critical of his own people, that they make bad choices? Or is that just me reading it something, probably?
I think.
Are they cursed?
Not necessarily Jungian archetypes, but Diaz creates certain archetypes of Dominican men and women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talks about their redeeming qualities and areas that are probably not quite as desirable.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's, I wouldn't say that Junot Diaz is critical of his own people any more than he's complimentary of his own people, so to speak. There, I think the answer to your question is yes, it's both.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Yeah. That when you bring up the archetype thing, is there does seem to be some of that, that there's the, that there's some representation there. They are real people. That's not the thing, but there is some representation of certain characteristics in each one. Like La Inca is the, you know, the older, very religious, very faithful to her family, living in regret because she didn't take care of Bali sooner. You know, I found her to be very heartbreaking in that regard. The story of her family was just, you know, just to think that a family could just disappear, could cease to exist, you know, in that situation. And I think, you know, I'm a lot older than you, so I did know about Trujillo. I that was something that was known. But like you said, 2 seconds of Dominican history. If you were born past that period, you're not going to know about it. You know, that happened during my lifetime. So, you know, we knew that there was this terrible person there. And it had something to do with the CIA, because that was all the time of Castro and all that time, you know, stuff.
Yeah. So, well, and see, you hear about Castro.
Yeah.
More than you do about Trujillo or Papadoc Duvalier.
Yeah.
And so the Cuban Missile Crisis, that is a bigger thing in America,
right,
in the history of America, the way that it was politicized and publicized, as opposed to these operations in Haiti or the Dominican Republic. So,
yeah. Another thing I thought in the book that was brilliant, because I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, was how Oscar, who's so nerdy in his own way, is very into comic books and fantasy. And the Lord of the Ring references just cracked me up. You know, I know they're meant to be more than funny, but they did crack me up calling Trujillo Sauron and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Oscar wants to write the Dominican version of the Lord of the Rings. Uh-huh. And he does spend a lot of time writing. What do you think that functions? The last thing I think of when I think of Dominican Republic is Tolkien.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, so where's Tolkien from?
It was English.
English. Yeah, that's right. So I think part of it positions this text in English and American letters.
Yeah.
And implies that it should be positioned, you know, it goes back to the question of where should U.S. Latino lit go in the bookstore? Should it be, you know, should it be on the American lit shelf? Or literature in English shelf, or should it not be? And so I will tell you that a lot of the nerd references. So I'm not a sci-fi fantasy guy. So a lot of that goes over my head.
Oh.
Yes. But I will say that when I say it goes over my head, it's a lot of the allusions I don't get. Like, I have to look them up and that sort of stuff. I don't just read them and just be like, oh, that's an allusion to such and such. Yeah. Just because I'm not big into sci-fi and fantasy. But there is this notion of magical realism.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
plays a role. So, you know, like Gabriel García Márquez, Cien Años de Soledad, Mario Vargas Llosa. So I think that it gives it some fantastical element to it. Or I think that you asked what the primary function of it. And I would say that it gives that sort of magical, fantastic, supernatural leaning towards the narration.
Yeah.
But, you know, The Brief Lecher's Life of Oscar Wilde is also a hero story.
Yes.
And so I think that's also one of the functions of those allusions is that it's a hero story and a story where somebody is, you know, I used the word earlier, Bildungsroman, where an outsider, you know, comes to terms, Bildungsroman, coming of age novel, where an outsider comes to terms with the society that he or she inhabits that positions them as subaltern. And so I think that those are kind of the functions of the allusions. You know, one of these days I will read Lord of the Rings and it'll be kind of like Top Gun. I learned all of the Top Gun pop culture references before I actually watch Top Gun. So it'll be the same thing. I'll go and I'll read The Lord of the Rings and instead of reading Junot Díaz thinking about The Lord of the Rings, I'll read The Lord of the Rings and I'll think of Junot Díaz. Oh, that's what he meant when he said such and such.
Well, I think you'll see a lot of connections though at a deeper level because it's a hero story, but I can see the connection now that you bring those up. I saw it just as since he's nerdy and he likes fantasy and that was, but I think there's a whole lot more deeper connections to it, especially the way Oscar talks. When he talks to people, he's very formal. He talks like an Oxford scholar or something, you know? So I just have a few more questions. And one of them has to do with how your students respond to this book when you have them read it.
Well, I think that in a certain degree, I think students like to read a text with curse words. They think that it's funny. They think that it's fun. So I think that students, it just like it did for me, it opens a door to a completely new world. That they, which is ultimately what a book is supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the things that my students, one of the conversations that we've had is, what's the deal with the man with no face?
Mm.
And that's the curse and the notion of, you know, so-and-so was driving by and saw a man sitting on the front porch, but the man had no face.
Uh-huh.
And so I recall us having some significant conversations surrounding that. And also, you know, it helps us call into question our own beliefs about certain things, like mm-hmm. what it means to be a hero. You know, what is our concept of race and sexuality and so I would say that generally students have responded positively to the text. I've never gotten there's never been a complaint that was brought to my attention.
Okay.
About the content of the text. Now, I do provide sort of a trigger warning.
Yeah.
So which generally I don't do. I generally don't do a trigger warning for this mm-hmm. book. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you know, there's some there's some language that's, I'll tell them ahead of time, you know, this is academic freedom. There's some language here that's offensive.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I wondered, especially about the racial slurs, that there's a lot of that, but yeah. You know, you, I'm not sure that people get as upset about that as we're led to believe, but especially if they know it's in literature and it's part of the culture there.
Yeah.
And well, what is
the, and I don't, yeah. I also don't say the words.
Here. Yeah.
You know, those are words that I don't use. And if I'm reading from the book, I don't say the word either.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, so there's the.
Yeah. I felt also that in his footnotes, he, a couple of times he does refer to the Mirabal sisters. You know, he does refer to them, but he seems to treat them as legends, that they were people who died, they were martyrs, but he doesn't like really, it's like they're not relevant to the average person's life who's maybe in the diaspora. I don't know. Did you get that sense, or was it just wasn't something he was going to deal with? Because my understanding is that they were considered like saints and martyrs and really part of the resistance, and people made a big deal about that, the Dominican people.
Yeah. I'm going to cop out again and say I wouldn't really be able to speak to that.
Okay.
I think what you're picking up is stronger than what I picked up.
Yeah.
In the references.
Uh-huh.
But that's not to say that your reading is more or less accurate than mine.
Okay.
So for me, it's not as strong as mm-hmm. as what you just described.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's true. I think it's just my perspective, and yeah. So
I would maybe have to get back. I would maybe have to reread in the time of the butterflies and get back to you.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, Alvarez is so what's the word? It's not hagiographic, but she's just very, you know, she obviously loves these people and respects them so much, and so. It's a woman's story, so I can see the difference. It's just a whole different thing that he's doing versus what she was trying to do. So, yeah. So at this point, I always ask, is there anything else you want to say?
I am just, you know, very grateful for you thinking of me. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, Barbara. And it's great to talk about this text. I will tell you, I'm kind of like you the second time that I read it. Now, I mean, this was one of my dissertation texts. You know, I wrote a dissertation on Junot Diaz and Edwidge Dontica. So those were Junot Diaz, Haitian American, or Junot Diaz, Dominican American author, Edwidge Dontica, Haitian American author. And, you know, I thought that I had read this book, or that I knew this book upwards, backwards, you know, backwards, forwards, and upside down. But then rereading it, I still caught on to some things that I didn't necessarily pick up on, you know, in my previous study. But, you know, just as Heraclitus said, you know, you can't ever, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't ever step in the same river more than once. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I've been contemplating on what reading is about. You know, how many times do you need to read a book? Well, you, over time, you know, maybe every few years, I think, for any book. But also, sometimes the book reads us.
Sure.
In a way, you know.
Yeah. I'm a very different Forrest than I was 10 years ago.
Exactly. Just, and I'm a different person than I was the first time I read this book, too. So, yeah, there was another book. Oh, I tried to read Toni Morrison like 30 years ago, and I was like, eh. And then I read something last year, and it was, yeah, it was the blow your hair back thing. It was,
yeah,
blew me away. The book did. I mean, I can't get over it. It was so good. So just the way she wrote. This has been a fun and intriguing conversation about The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde by Junot Diaz. And I'm so glad that we could have it together. I want to thank Dr. Horace Blackburn for his time, because he's a very busy person with lots to do.
Anytime.
And I appreciate your time and your effort and your wisdom and insights about this important book.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really enjoyed it.
Yes, me too. Bye-bye.
Bye.